Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It is Friday, time to stock up for the weekend. That means a trip to Brewers Outlet, and when you go, you'll find the best selection of beer anywhere. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Maybe you want wine coolers, maybe you want water, maybe you want soft drinks. They have plenty of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. Plenty of great help, too. Lots of help. They'll be able to get the cases that you need out to the car. Really well laid out store. And yes, all together now. You've heard the refrain for 6 years, and I mean it. The pickle bar is second to none. Well done out there. Nice hearing you join in on the chorus. It's all, and of course we love the barrels and the dills, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I am proudly in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's October. It's a nice time to buy a car. Sunbury Motors is the place to go. All right. Just to let you know, I'm always fair about these things. Time now for the play-by-play calls of the day. And yes, the Red Sox went down in flames yesterday, and that's because our play-by-play calls of the day, all three, Jose Altuve home runs. We may talk about Aaron Judge, justifiably so. We may talk about Giancarlo Stanton, justifiably so. Judge hit 52 home runs this year. Stanton hit 59. But maybe the best player pound for pound in the game is Jose Altuve.
Altuve smacks one toward left center field. Back at the wall, Benintendi. They go back to back and go up 2-0.
See you later! First Bregman, now Altuve. 2-0 Astros.
Now Jose Altuve with a long drive to left center field. Back. Going again. Second of the game for Altuve. 5-2 Houston.
Do not try to sneak a piece of cheese by Altuve. He is too quick for that nonsense.
Here's the 1-1. This ball's belted to left. That ball's got a chance. Make it three.
Are you kidding me, Altuve? Three home runs. That's an MVP.
Physically, no one would ever confuse Altuve with the Sultan of SWAT. But he's on the same list now. And all three were crushed.
No doubters.
En este juego de pelota, sí, tres cuadrangulares para el Chaparrito de Maracay.
Wow.
Well, we gave you all the calls, whether it was MLB Network with Bob Costas, the Astros Radio Network, one was the Red Sox Network, and last, the Astros Spanish Network. Jose Altuve, American League batting champion. And over the last 5 years, he is among the elite in baseball. You may not know a lot about him. Red Sox fans today know too much about him after he hit three home runs yesterday in the Astros' 8-2 win over Boston. All right, Penn State Northwestern coming up tomorrow. That game will be at Ryan Field in Evanston. Very pleased to bring in Teddy Greenstein from the Chicago Tribune. Teddy, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be with you, man.
All right. Well, I want to get to Northwestern first of all. They're two up and two down. What does the running game mean to them when you watch them?
Well, I mean, the running game was supposed to be a lot better, and that's why they've got two down this year, part of the reason. Justin Jackson, as you know, led the Big Ten in rushing last year. I mean, he's outstanding, and he's vying for his fourth straight 1,000-yard season, and if he has a good season this year, he'll be second all-time in the Big Ten in rush yards after Ron Dayne, but it just hadn't happened in two of the four games. You know, Duke was almost nothing and very little at Wisconsin. Part of it is that Justin has not been totally healthy, but a bigger part is that the O-line has just been extremely disappointing, really both run blocking and pass blocking.
Fitz along the way was able to compare Trace McSorley to Dan Persa, who, by the way, is a Pennsylvania guy, and Persa had a really good career at Northwestern. What are your thoughts on him, and then what are your thoughts on Saquon Barkley?
Yeah, God, I know Dan Persa very well, still do. He was amazing. You know, the thing that was great about it, you know, two things that stood out about Dan Persa. If it was third and six, he'd scramble for seven. If it was third and four, he'd get five. Trey says some of that to him. Danny also was incredibly accurate. I think he ended up being like the Big Ten single season leader in accuracy. He was over 70%. You know, he didn't want to throw the ball away. He wanted to keep that number high. He didn't take a ton of chances, but very accurate, very smart player. And Trace is obviously spectacular. I mean, such a good college quarterback. You know, I don't care if he doesn't play a minute in the NFL. He will go down as probably one of the best quarterbacks in Penn State history, if not league history. You know, he's gutty. You can just see he's got a great feel for the position, and he's fun to watch. And then Saquon, you know, I got to know him and his family a little bit last year because he was our Silver Football winner. I remember sitting down with his mom and dad in Indianapolis and getting to know them and their story about, you know, moving from the Bronx. And then, you know, I don't have to tell you, he's just such a delightful, humble kid. He could be totally cocky, and he's not. So I like how Fitz put it. I mean, he's one of the best he's ever seen on film. Obviously, already one of the best in Big Ten history, and hopefully he'll be, you know, top three, top five in the draft.
Guy I've really liked since he's been there, we were talking about Dan Persa. He's a different kind of quarterback, but Clayton Thorson. Pros and cons as you view Clayton Thorson, Teddy.
Yeah, you know, he's definitely on the NFL's radar because Mel Kiper, you know, put him fifth among underclassmen. He's got very, very good size. He has good arm strength. He's very intelligent. He's a hard worker. He's a good leader. All that's good, but, you know, he's missing some of what Trace has, which is just a feel for the position, you know, avoiding pressure, knowing when to throw it away. He got sacked eight times last week, eight times at Wisconsin, and, you know, that's on everybody. That's on receivers not getting open. That's on the O-line not doing a very good job. That's probably on some of the play calling, but it's also on Clayton. He is just holding the ball way too long, and he can't have that, you know, so he has to just be a little smarter and have a little more savvy going into these plays and, you know, and having that that clock kind of wind down in his head.
Jack Hamm and I were talking this morning, and both of us were talking about a couple of players on that Northwestern defense we really like when we look at them on tape. When you look at them, what do you see in the Northwestern defense?
Well, Patty Fisher is a linebacker who started this year, and Pat Fitzgerald, who knows a little bit about linebacking plays, says, you know, he's been kind of the revelation. He's been outstanding, big hitter, had some big plays against Wisconsin. And then the one you always got to think about is Godwin Igwebuike, who's number 16. He had a pick last week of Alex Hornibrook, and he's, you know, been around forever, potential maybe second-round pick in the NFL draft, smart, strong, physical, everything you'd want in a safety. The problem with Northwestern is they just don't get pressure. They really don't get much pressure unless they blitz. And then they're susceptible. So they don't have really an athletic defensive end who's going to be, you know, harassing Trace much on Saturday.
I was kidding with Jack this morning. He said, Godwin Igwebuike, he may not make a lot of tackles on the broadcast. No, but I'll work it out between now and then,
Jack. It's hard to say the name. I know. I mean, I've been saying it for 4 years, and I still stumble.
I mean, Amani Oyewariye, I've got that one down. I mean, you should see the look of the other guys when I tell him he's available to play.
Oh, God. Last year, Northwestern had a kid, well, not last year, several years, Efadi Odenebo. And, like,
one of
those names. Yeah, at first you struggle, and now it's just Efadi Odenebo, and it's so easy. But right. Godwin's last name, man, it still gets me tired.
I know. I mean, now, Odenebo, he was a good rusher off the edge, so you had to somehow get him in there.
Totally.
Because he's got to get a sack.
Yeah, right. He got his name called because he had certain games. He, you know, he had like some three sack games, and they miss him. You know, they had Dean Lowry, they had Deontay Gibson, and they had Efadi in the last several years. And that's what they lack now. They have a guy named Joe Gaziano, who's pretty good. Joe mm-hmm. Gaz, they call him. And they got a freshman, Sam Dup Miller, but you can just call him Sam Miller. And those guys showed a little pressure last week in Camp Randall. But, you know, they need a lot more to make an impact.
Is there any thought through five games of what we're seeing in the Big Ten, or do you want to see this bake a little more for three more weeks?
In terms of what?
Just seeing who's really actually good and who might be just a pretender.
Well, I mean, in the West, I've already declared that Wisconsin has won the Big Ten West, which Nebraska fans are thrilled with me for. But, you know, you look at the West and it's like, okay, Nebraska's a pretend 2-0 because of having beaten Rutgers in Illinois. Right. Iowa has already lost two games, and the Iowa-Wisconsin game is at Camp Randall. Northwestern has lost to Wisconsin, so it's like Northwestern's a game and a half behind. You know, Minnesota has lost a game to the East in Maryland. Purdue has lost a game to the East in Michigan. So I don't possibly see anybody challenging Wisconsin, but in the East, absolutely. I mean, you know, three and a half teams are at play. I mean, if Michigan State is somehow better than we think. But I'm unbelievably excited for that rotation of games involving Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State.
I've got to ask you about the Adidas deal because you know college basketball as well as anybody I've met along the way. People have said to me when they heard me talk about it last week, you didn't sound surprised, so I know you're not surprised by all this. What did strike me was that the efficiency with which they got to the various layers of this. What did you think of the layers that they got to in this, from agents to shoe company to player to assistant coach?
Yeah, you know, when you're the FBI, man, it's probably a lot of fun. Everybody's so scared of you. You know, I mean, the NCAA comes and they're probably like, don't even bother returning this call. They can't do anything to me. You know, sports writers call, they got nothing. But when it's the FBI and you're looking at prison time, if you don't start squawking, then, you know, then it's just going to be fascinating to see how much is revealed. And, you know, to me, there's certain schools we've always known have cheated. And then there's certain ones that you just are not sure. I mean, has anything gone on at Duke? Has anything gone on at Michigan State? I mean, those are programs that get elite players. They're also programs that sometimes miss on elite players, especially in Michigan State's case. And you've always wondered why. So it will be fascinating to see how it unfolds and if it'll stop the cheating for at least a little while.
What's it going to be like for Northwestern this year, having to play out in Rosemont and also practicing? What's going to be, you know, because Chris Collins has done a great job, but what's this scenario going to be like for them?
Yeah, good question. And, you know, we were talking about this yesterday. They had Northwestern Basketball Media Day. The practice situation is really good because they're actually moving where it's more convenient to campus. It's, you know, it's a gym that is usually more for hosting intramurals, so it's certainly not that big or fancy, but it's closer to where the players are, like their apartments and classes, so they like that. But the games will be different. I mean, not only the fact that it's a good 35 to 45-minute drive from campus, depending on traffic, but it's a huge gym. It's, you know, 17,500 capacity, so maybe they'll rope some areas off. So, you know, Northwestern's going to have a great start and, you know, try some way to get the students out there, bribe them with food or, you know, however you can do it. And then, and then just try to fill it up as much as possible because, you know, DePaul has been playing there for years and they get crowds of like 3,500, total ghost town. So if the Cats are doing here's what helps Northwestern. They have a lot of fans, I think, that are not that close to the North Shore, that they live closer to O'Hare, and they're like, all right, this is going to be convenient for us this year. Will there be enough to get 10, 12,000 people there for games? That's probably asking a lot.
And Media Day is going to be a couple of weeks, but it's going to be at Madison Square Garden, which means, you know, which goes with the tournament. They're compressing the schedule this year, including that December weekend. What are your thoughts on the December weekend and also the compression of the schedule?
Yeah, I mean, Steve, here's the thing with New York. I'm from Manhattan, so anybody, when people email me and they're like, isn't this horrible and this awful, I say, look, I think it's great. But I'm totally biased. Any excuse for me to get a trip home is a good thing. And I talked my way into, you know, getting out there for both Big Ten and Big East media days in a couple weeks. So, you know, that said, the fact that they had to move the tournament up a week and that alters the whole schedule, I would just say that, you know, Jim Delaney and those guys better hope there's not some, you know, rash of injuries this year because of the compressed schedule. I certainly have no problem with starting Big Ten play earlier in the season. I mean, in fact, it works out great for me. I mean, I'll be at that Big Ten football championship game in Indy, and then it's Northwestern at Purdue the next day. So it's literally on the way home. So again, you know, I think a lot of us look at these things and they say, how does it affect me? And in this case, it's good. And I love watching basketball at Madison Square Garden. I mean, obviously Penn State's played there, and Northwestern had a tournament there a couple years ago. So it'll be weird, but I think it'll ultimately be a great time.
Yeah, for guys like you and me, the Garden special. I mean, it really is. And I hope that there are teams of the Big Ten that understand that when they get to it. But I also think when they go to the possibility of 20 games, I think that opening weekend in December is going to stay because I think they feel it will help grow the game. What do you think?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, in the same way that you should be having conference football games that first week. I mean, I went to Ohio State, Indiana on that Thursday night. You know, if Indiana had been playing Charleston Southern, needless to say, I would not have been in Bloomington that night. So, you know, you want to put your good product forward. I mean, it's not like they have to have five Big Ten games that first weekend, but have one. You know, try to have one intriguing game in all these weekends. And the same goes for basketball because, you know, I mean, the vast majority of sports fans, like, just pay so little attention to college basketball until January or even February. So have some great games. I mean, Northwestern not only plays at Purdue, but a couple days earlier hosts Illinois on that Friday night. So I think that's great for the sport.
I want to ask you about the young people. You mentioned, you know, bribing them with food to go out to Rosemont. That aside, but I want to pick up on that. How do you view millennials as to how they view sports now, Teddy? It's one thing for you and me to sit here with our backgrounds and we say, you know, we've got this memory and that's why we're attached to it. What's the attachment? How can they get millennials in any sport really interested in the sport beyond playing fantasy NFL and fantasy baseball?
My God, two old guys talking about what it's like to be in our 20s. We're probably not exactly qualified. I mean, I know this, man. I was at, you know, Northwestern Wisconsin on Saturday, and it was basically not until the second quarter that the student section was filled up. And then goes up 31-10, and midway through the fourth, Northwestern's rallying, and half of them are gone. I think it's just tough, man. There's so much you're competing with now. Even if you have good Wi-Fi in the stadium, and I don't know if Wisconsin does, it's just, you know, people in their 20s, it's so much multitasking. I mean, they want to be in touch with each other. You know, Instagram, Snapchat, everything is such, it's so important in their lives. They can't think of just sitting there and watching a football game and talking to each other during all those commercial breaks. So I don't think that's going to change. I mean, I'd like to see, you know, if you can shorten the games a little bit, if you can entertain well, if you can have good Wi-Fi in the stadium, incentivize people to come, because it's also not just millennials. I mean, people in general, like Notre Dame is in danger of losing its home sellout streak this year. Nebraska football, different places. Like, you know, the TVs are so good and people love being at home. It's hard to get people to get to games. So I think it's exacerbated with young folks, but it's everybody.
An absolute pleasure, Teddy. I look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Can't wait, Steve. Have a good trip in. Take care.
Teddy Greenstein, Chicago Tribune. He's one of the best in the business and has been able to branch out to a lot more media. He's done a lot of work with Big Ten Network as one of their studio analysts for a while now, especially on their Sunday shows, whether it's football, basketball. He covers it all. He also covers a lot of golf along the way, too, and some baseball. As Teddy said, look, he said, Big Ten Media Days at Madison Square Garden. He says, I'm really happy about that. It's funny because I've talked to other broadcasters in the conference so far. They are not enamored with the fact that the Big Ten Basketball Media Day is going to be at Madison Square Garden because normally it's in Chicago. Well, when it's in Chicago, it really is so centrally located, it's easy for everybody to get to. But I'll be going to Big Ten Basketball Media Day myself. I'll be there. It's going to be interesting to hear some of the answers along the way.
because there's certain people that you go to and you can talk to, and you know you're going to get really good answers from, that you feel that are in the safe category with the scandal. For example, Tom Izzo would be one. You really feel comfortable. You can ask him about it. It'll be interesting to see what he says about it. John Beilein's another guy at Michigan that he's been on the ethics committee for years, been actually one of the leaders on it for years, to hear what he has to say about it. Mike Krzyzewski was very direct last week talking about it, saying, look, he says, this is not as widespread as people think. And Mike, of course, himself has a lot of one-and-dones. So we'll see what the coaches say, not next week, the week after, at Madison Square Garden in New York, and get their thoughts and their feel for it. Because you know all 14 coaches are going to be asked about it. And we'll see what the responses happen to be. Speaking of that, Dana O'Neill is going to join us to talk about that scandal. She has done extensive coverage on it. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
True refreshment can come in many forms, but it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Brewers Outlet Day, everybody. Great to have you with us here in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf. And it is Brewers Outlet Day, everybody. That means you need to go over to Reagan Street. Why? You need to stock up for the weekend. You need to stock up on the best selection of beer anywhere. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Maybe you like wine coolers. Water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. Great, great help there as well. You have plenty of help that will get cases to the car for you. Plenty of free parking there. Store's really well laid out. Every time I go in there, I'm always impressed by how it's laid out. So easy to find everything. And just on a lark, if there's something you can't find, you have plenty of great help there to take you in the right direction as well. And yes, there is the pickle bar. Oh, you need to stock up at the pickle bar. It is second to none. I think everyone's heard me say that, every Friday for almost 6 years now. So that's Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Yes, I love the barrels. Yes, I love the dills. Again, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. All right, time now for the sports bozo of the day, and then we'll get to Dana O'Neill. Everyone that has listened to this show for nearly 6 years now knows how I feel about the subject of, quote, chokers. I've never understood why, unless it's for your own personal gratification, that you'll label somebody else a choker when they don't perform to the level that you want. Well, yesterday, if you check out Twitter and you decided to do Twitter searches such as Chris Sale chokes, choke, choked, choker, Sale, Sale choked, you'll find a litany of individuals that are already jumping to the conclusion that Red Sox ace Chris Sale is an absolute choker in the postseason. Now, remember, the sample size of the Chris Sale pitching in the postseason happens to be one game. It's the only postseason game he's ever pitched. Did he pitch well yesterday? Absolutely not. Did not pitch well yesterday. In fact, if you heard our play-by-play calls of the day, Jose Altuve hit two of his three home runs off of him. Yet, Sale has kind of hit a wall, I think, a little bit. And here you look at his first 24 starts. He was invincible. He's being talked about through August 13th as an MVP candidate. 2.51 ERA, giving up 0.7 home runs per nine innings. Since then, his final eight regular season starts, ERA 4.30, giving up 2.15 home runs per nine innings. He's just been in a funk, and that's the way it goes. Oh, and by the way, the Astros are really, really good. Really good. I can't stand when people who can't do something themselves label somebody else as a choker. Now, I know he's getting $12 million a year. That the money part is always going to enter into how people feel about individuals. I understand that. All right. With that, I'm very pleased to bring in someone I consider to be a true friend, great writer, Dana O'Neill. Dana, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Steve. I appreciate it.
I want to start, before we get to the basketball part of it, this is something you have had to live with your entire career. I know Jordan Rodriguez because she was at the Center Daily Times and did great work here when she was here, doing great work at the Charlotte Observer. Where's the lack of respect coming from because you have to live it all the time yourself?
You know, I don't know. I mean, every time I think that we've evolved past the knuckle-dragging Neanderthals of the world, they seem to just come back and surprise me every once in a while. There's still a few left, I guess. I'm not sure, what else people have to do. It's to the point now, everyone knows it's wrong. People have been taught and trained and all of that. But I think the bottom line is, unless a person truly understands it, as opposed to just being told what this is about and that a woman is as capable as a man to do these things, unless they truly believe this, this is where we're going to end up. I mean, as long as people have those thoughts in their head, I guess it's going to come out. Yeah, exactly. I know Jordan. I know who she is. She's a terrific reporter. She's a hard worker. She has every right to ask any question she wants. And I give her a lot of credit, too, for tracking Cam Newton down after the fact and asking for some clarification, because that took some courage. And I'm proud of her, and yeah. I think that was really important that she did that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, there is a major difference between asking questions and questioning someone. If you're questioning someone, then, of course, then all of a sudden the contentious side does come out. She was asking questions, good questions.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, and look, our job is to ask questions, right? And sometimes it does get contentious, but that still remains our job as reporters. That's what we're paid to do. And I just think it comes down to professionalism and respect and really appreciating the fact that, when I look at, it's like when you look at a person and you're taught to not see race, you should also be taught in some instances not to see gender. This is a professional reporter asking a professional question, and she has every right to do it.
Yep, absolutely. Now I want to ask about the basketball scheme. You've written about it. You have a lot of contacts with people. Some people say this is the tip of the iceberg. Mike Krzyzewski says no. John Calipari says they should go with the baseball model. What are some of the elements in this that you are hearing?
I mean, so, I think in some regards the tip of the iceberg theory is not out of the question in the fact that if these guys who are named in this federal investigation choose to sing, or if they go and do what people have reported, that Nike computers have been seized, that other things could come out. But I don't think it's going to be this slow drip of names over the next 3 weeks. I mean, this is the FBI we're talking about. They're not just going to float names out there. It's going to be investigated. The charges have to stick. So could there be more? Absolutely. Do I think there's going to be more in the next 2 weeks? I don't know about that. How do you fix it? I have bandied about 1,000 things in my head and with friends and other media members, and I don't think there's one simple thing. I think it has to be a multi-pronged approach, which is why it's so difficult to fix, because it's got to include player, or excuse me, coaches. It's got to include shoe companies. It's got to include agents. It's got to include presidents, athletic directors, and at some level, parents. Because all of the people that I just mentioned are culpable in one way or the other in kids getting paid. And I'm not sure how you get all those people in the same room to agree on anything. That's why I become a cynic.
Right, and same here, because I know when it came out, I had several people say to me, you didn't sound like you were surprised by this. What impressed me, and of course the FBI can do this, is that they exposed the layers of it, and which goes to what your point you just made about there's so much here to fix.
Yeah, I mean, the problems go in so many directions. So you start at the base level. You have a kid playing basketball who's pretty good, and he has parents or hangers-on around him who think that they can profit off of his back. So they make the pitch, and then someone has to take it. And so the coach takes it, and then the shoe company says, well, this is a way for me to, you know, maybe secure this kid in the future. And then that happens. And then sometimes the coach gets caught not by the FBI for doing this, but guess what? 5 years after his show clause expires, he's recycled and rehired by another school, which is where the ADs and the presidents come in. So they just keep recycling these guys and giving them jobs, knowing exactly what they're all about. And head coaches keep hiring assistant coaches who aren't X's and O's guys. They're connected, for whatever that means, right? So you, at some level, know what you're getting. So I agree. I think exposing exactly how the sausage is made should be eye-opening to the general public, and hopefully people inside look within themselves and say, there's a lot that has to be fixed here, so where do we start? But my goodness, if we don't close out every avenue, it's going to continue. We're going to be right back here if we don't find a way to shut off every valve.
It is, it's my opinion, and I'll see whether you agree with this or not, that if you put the four assistant coaches in a room, and if you asked them if they violated NCAA rules, and they're being honest about it, they would say, oh, yeah, we knew we were violating NCAA rules. If you asked them if they thought they were violating the law, my guess would be all four would have said no.
Absolutely. I think that there are a lot of stunned people, you know, thinking like, yeah, worst case scenario, I'm going to get written up by the NCAA. I don't think anybody envisioned anybody looking at time in federal prison. You know, in my mind, in these situations, often goes to the people nobody talks about. Imagine if you're, you know, Lamont Evans' wife, and you put your head on the pillow at night, and your husband's a basketball coach, and you wake up the next day, and he's facing however many years in a federal prison. And how in the world do you wrap your arms around that? So, you know, hopefully, maybe that's what scares people straight, is that this isn't a joke anymore. Now, the end and the means that the FBI had to go to get this, they're not going to invest this all the time, obviously. So are they going to come up with this all the time? No. But as an assistant coach or a head coach, if you're doing this, it might give you pause to not do it if you think on the off chance that the FBI is wiretapping you.
Exactly, and that's what this comes down to, because it was somebody involved with the Securities and Exchange Commission, and he said, you know, I might have something else, because he's trying to reduce his sentence, which goes back to your original premise, hey, look, if these guys decide to sing, well, that's what this other guy did, is they decided to sing. I've got to ask you about when you the head coaches here and all this, how concerned should a couple of them be along the line because of what's happened here?
Well, I think they should be very concerned because, look, maybe not for federal investigation purposes, but with the NCAA. The NCAA put in place, you know, years ago, you know, that the old defense of I didn't know doesn't count anymore. You know, head coaches are expected to know. There's no more plausible deniability. That's why, you know, before this happened, Rick Pitino was facing a 9-game suspension over the scandal that precipitated this one. That's why Jim Boeheim sat out. That's why Jim Calhoun sat out. So if you're a head coach, and even if your defense is, my assistants did this without my knowledge, you're looking at something from the NCAA, some sort of punishment at the very least. And I think certainly going forward, if I'm a head coach, I am making much smarter decisions about who the assistants I surround myself with, because it seems to me a lot of these guys are making deals with, again, people who are connected as opposed to people that they know. And you are putting your career, your reputation, your legacy, and your salary on the line. Rick Pitino's salary and legacy and reputation are done because of Andre McGee once before and Jordan Fairnow. Was it worth it? I don't think so.
No, it's not. Now, this is not connected with it, but this is an indirect. Should the NBA just say the heck with the 19 years of age in 1 year and allow players to go direct from high school into the pros anyway, like they used to?
I've said that for 1,000 years because I've always made the argument, if you're a phenomenal ballerina or a phenomenal carpenter, you don't have to go to college. If you have a skill or a talent or a trade, you don't need to go to college. And should you choose not to and you fail because you made a bad decision, that is then on you. I don't see where basketball is any different. I think certainly eliminating the one and done and the kids, these are the kids that are, you know, these are the kids you're dealing with, kids who know they don't have to go to college, don't want to be in college, but are stuck in college for some period of time. So that's a lot of what's going on here, and there's this dogfight to get them for their 6 months of service. The only concern I have is, you know, I think eliminating the one and done for 1,000 reasons is important. The only concern I have about this actually undoing the problem is that just means the next 50 guys become the most coveted people, right? Somebody's still going to be the most coveted person for a college basketball coach. So I'm not sure that that eliminates this problem, but it certainly alleviates a lot of issues for sure, because that's, for the shoe company's purposes, that's where the money is. They're not going to go try to give, you know, the kid that's ranked 75th in the country $150,000, because guess what? His shoe deal is not going to pay that money back, more than likely, unless he's Steph Curry. And you only get a couple Steph Currys in a lifetime. You get the money on the guaranteed guys who are at the top 50.
For the NCAA, this is their cash cow, the tournament, without question. It's not college football. College football is done by the conferences. Yep. So for them, how do they need to, number one, you and I both know they don't have the personnel to go out and investigate this. I mean, so that's number one. The FBI does. The FBI has subpoena power, and they also have the fear of God that they can bring to you when they talk to you. I mean, they've got that part. But for the NCAA, this is their cash cow. They don't want to sit there and have a tournament where everybody goes, hey, great, we've got Wagner. So how do they need to proceed with this in your opinion?
Well, it depends on if they want to continue to have teeth or not. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Do you want to be what you say that you are? You are the governing body that is about righteousness and evening the playing field and all of those things. If that's the stance that you still continue to want to take, then you've got to put some teeth behind your bite, which they don't currently have. You have to be able to enforce a rule or create a rule that basically says if you're a head coach or an assistant coach that gets hit with, is found to be guilty of a major violation, and they have stipulated what's major versus minor, you are looking at an automatic 10-year lifetime ban, whatever you want to go with. Something that really is going to come home and hit people in the head. They're going to say, okay, I can't anymore. So if that's the only thing that the NCAA can do in terms of really scaring people, because they don't have subpoena power, they can't go and wiretap anybody, and, you know, so they're not going to get to the bottom of this. And they can beg coaches that they long have to tell them the truth, but they never do. So the only power that they have is to enforce some version of a penalty that removes a coach's livelihood, and maybe a player too. You know, if you're a player and you're caught involved in this, you can no longer compete in college athletics, period. I don't care if you're 16 or you're 22, your college eligibility is automatically over. It's got to be something black and white like that. But the question is, do they want to go there? You know, it's a membership thing. I mean, we talk about the NCAA of Mark Emmert and all these people, but at the end of the day, the universities make these decisions. So I don't know if they will actually make that decision.
All right, so now if you and I privately talk to coaches, they will tell us, and I think you'd agree with this, that the AAU system doesn't make them comfortable. But when they publicly talk about it, it's fine. But privately, they really aren't. Did part of this with the FBI expose, at least to the public, the AAU system a little bit?
I think it does to a certain extent. I think people still don't have a clue. I mean, they don't understand how much money these AAU coaches are getting paid in terms of quote-unquote salary and gear and all of that. You know, I think that would be staggering for people to understand just how lucrative it is to get the right team with the right players together and do this. You know, I think that is a big part of the problem. Back in the day, you know, a kid was listening to his high school coach, and the high school coach theoretically knew him for 2, 3, 4 years, had a feeling for who he was, who the family was, and the kid was actually, you know, playing games and sticking home. Now they're flying around the country playing in these showcase tournament where nobody defends and nobody passes and there's no winning or losing, doesn't matter, and it's basically individualized. Give me my gear and off I go. There's, you know, it's instant gratification. I think that needs to be taken back. People have, heck, college coaches in 1992, I think it was, proposed that the NCAA take over summer ball, that they sanction only three tournaments and they run them. And the President's Commission said, no, we don't want to do that. So, you know, that's a simple solution. You want to remove the shoe companies, this is the way to do it. But again, you're going to start a war because college basketball needs a shoe company. So it's this just constant quid pro quo. I scratch your back. If you cut me out, then you cut out your money that you're getting your sponsorships and everything else. So I think it comes down to how honest are people when they really say they want to clean it up or they just want to put lip service to it.
Yeah, I noticed, Dana, that Louisville did not send the shoe money back. I noticed they were saying, you know what, we had to sever ties here. Final question, and I appreciate your time very much. In the people you've had a chance to talk to, have they been cautious in talking with you a bit, or have some been very direct with you?
Well, it depends. Like, you know, one of those things, I had to do a column for Monday, and as I'm thinking about who can I speak to, I'm like, well, I need to speak to people that I know in 6 weeks aren't going to be caught up in all of this. You know what I mean? So their words don't ring hollow. Who's honest? Who can I call? Mike Bray, Notre Dame. Tells you anything you want to know, everything on the record. I talked to Phil Martelli at St. Joe's. I talked to Mark Hugh. I talked to Tom Izzo. You know, you go to the places that you know you can go. The rest of them are like, okay, they want to talk about it and they want to hear about it. What do you think and what do you know? But I can't go on the record about that because they know. And we know at some level what's going to sound like a bunch of baloney coming out of certain people's mouths. So, you know, I definitely think there's a lot of spin going on right now, and until people are confident that they're safe. I mean, I was, you know, on the last Tuesday when this all broke, there were a lot of schools like neener at Louisville. I'm like, you better be careful. Like, just better be careful. So I think people are understandably cautious because they're, but by the grace of God, go I. I think they're all thinking.
Yeah, I think they are. It is always a pleasure. It's great to have you back on the show again, and the profession's better having the Dana O'Neill writing columns out there again. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, Steve. Appreciate it.
The outstanding Dana O'Neill. Great to have her on the show today. And our show has been brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Proud to be in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's October. It's a perfect time to buy a car. A lot of high school football tonight. Sealands Grove on Eagle 107 this evening. Sean with the post-game coverage, which is outstanding, afterward. Milton on WMLP. Lewisburg on 100.9 The Valley. And right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, Kevin Herr and the coach, Dick Court, will join you from Jersey Shore as Shikellamy takes on Jersey Shore tonight at 7 on the air at 6:30. Penn State football tomorrow at noon. We're on at 10:30 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.